I'm Scott Fishthall, but I'm going to do a little intro for Dave as he's he'll be giving the presentation here today. Dave has, of course, won all the major research awards. He's won the Research Presentation Award here on a couple of occasions. One is the Doug Pappas Award, one before it was even called the Doug Pappas Award. He's won the Chadwick Award. He is, of course, one of the recipients of our highest honor at Sabre, the Bob Davis Award. Done many publications with Baseball Research Journal, many other places. Of course, the founder of RetroSheet and father of RetroSheet and longtime president of RetroSheet, now treasurer. Those may not know, he had a very prominent mention in Jane Levy's Koufax biography. In fact, a lot of it was built around the tape that he has of Koufax's Perfect Game. And he is, one other thing on a personal note, he's one of the most welcoming individuals I've ever met. Just a wonderful, wonderful person, and he's making his 25th presentation at a Sabre convention. So we've given him a whole hour, so as a reward. So again, everybody, a good hand for Dave Smith.
Well, I have to start by talking about my shirt, because I wear this every year when I come, and many people don't know the whole story on it. Let me just show it to you clearly. See, Dodger shirt. I've always been a Dodger person, and I've done a lot of things for the Dodgers team. And to show their gratitude, on the occasion of my 60th birthday, they gave me this shirt. And it's a real game shirt. It wasn't game used, but it's a real player's shirt. So this, I don't have much memorabilia, but this one I'm keeping. So it was a lot of years ago. And since then, a couple guys have worn 60 for the Dodgers. Andrew Tools did, and somebody else is now, I forget who that is. Okay, to today's business at hand. Three batter rule. The length of games, or the pace of play, as some people call it, has been a frequent topic for a long time. And Major League Baseball is concerned enough about this that they have instituted a lot of rules to try to remedy what they perceive as a problem. The most recent one, before this year, is the creation of the three batter rule, which says a reliever now must face at least three batters or pitch to the end of the inning that he enters. If he gets injured, he can leave before that. If he gets to the end of the inning and has not yet faced three batters and comes back for the next inning, he still has to get up to a total of three. Now, why did they do this? Their thought was that by limiting the number of mid-inning changes, they would speed up games. Well, there is some support for that. In my 2019 paper, Sabre 49 in San Diego, I came up with this. The time added for a mid-inning pitcher change is over 2 minutes. Time added for a pitching change at the start of an inning is 14 seconds. So clearly, a mid-inning pitcher change does add a lot of time. Okay, so it sounds on the surface of it, that's a good idea. We'll make the games go faster by limiting mid-inning pitcher changes. That does duck the question of why we want games to go faster, but we'll save that for another time. My analysis is going to have two basic components. I'm going to look at historical pattern of relief pitcher changes, and I'm going to look at the consequences of this new three-batter rule, which has been in place for 3 years now, since 2020. And in terms of performance and as well as game length. The data used for the present study all come from RetroSheet. Everything I have comes from RetroSheet. And the data I'm using are freely available. You can go there today, right now, and download all the data that I use. And here's what I use. From 1920 to 2022, the last 103 seasons, we have every play of every game. 181,000 games, 13,900,000 plate appearances. From 1901 to 1919, we only have box scores. It's another 24,000 games. So my analysis today will be based on 205,000 games, which is a good sample size. The basic parameter that drives everything else when you talk about pitcher usage is percentage of complete games. Now, a lot of people have seen this graph for a long time. the change in percentage of complete games starting in 1901. It used to be up around 90%, and now it's less than 1%. It's a fairly astonishing graph. It's not a continuous decrease, however. It went up in World War I, in World War II, and with the start of the DH, the percentage of complete games went up. Let's look at this a different way. Look at the right-hand axis now. Innings pitched, the average innings pitched per start. That also has decreased since 1901, from being over 8 to being down now around 5.5. But the decline is nowhere near as fast as the percentage of complete games is. Two really interesting things about this red line. In 2016, where the arrow is there, it took a really sharp nosedive. That the innings average innings pitched by starters went way down starting in 2016. And of course, in the last 3 years, it's come back because of the three batter rule, we've got starting pitchers going a little further. The percentage of games that have relievers is the mirror image of this, but that's not terribly interesting. What's interesting is the number of relief pitchers in each game, and that's what this is. The number of relief pitchers per game has gone up, just as the percentage of complete games has gone down. That up until about 1940, the percentage was really low. It was less than one relief pitcher per team per game. Once you get to 1947, it went above one for the first time, and it stayed there relatively constantly until the DH came in 1973. Then, starting 1983, it began another steep climb until we get up to the current levels, where it's 3.5 relief pitchers per team per game. That's 7 relievers per game on average now, on average. Look at the last year. In fact, it went way down, but it only went down last year. The three batter rule has been there for 3 years, but the effect on total relief pitchers has only been seen in the last single year. Now, it's two more lines I want to put up. One is changes in mid-inning, and the other is changes at the start of an inning, which are going to be rather different. Before 1940, they were pretty close, and then from 1946 to 1972, they're almost identical. That they're two different kinds of changes. Then starting around 1983, it took off. They have a great increase in the number of changes, but look at most of these are changes to start the inning. That the mid-inning changes did not change very much across all of this, certainly not compared to starting the inning. It turns out that the mid-inning changes are the most interesting. So I'm going to take the bottom line off of that graph. Okay, and here's the last 3 years, of course. Everything has changed. The bottom line off that graph, and here it is, just the mid-inning changes all by themselves. Indeed, you have the World War II change. This is after World War I. You have the World War II change. You have the DH change. And you also have a change in 1997. You start to have a decline in the number of mid-inning changes. Now, what's special about 1997? What happened in 1997? The only thing I can think of, and I'm really looking for suggestions, that's the year that interleague play started. Each team played an average of 16 interleague games in the 6 years where the decline happened. Maybe it's that managers are getting used to the fact they're now playing games that the DH rule reversed from what they were. I don't know. But something happened in 1997 that it went down. After that, it was relatively stable after that decline. And of course, in the last 2 years, it went way down. Now, that I only circled the last 2 years there, and the three batter rule has been in place for 3 years. The 2020 season is a complete outlier. There were a lot of seven-inning games that year. In fact, there were 11% of the games played in 2020 were seven-inning games. And the next year, there were 5% were seven-inning games. So when the three-batter rule was implemented, a lot of analysts said, this will be the end of the loogie. Now, loogie, which is a term I never thought I'd use in a presentation, but here it is. Loogie stands for the left-handed one-out guy. That's where it comes from. It was created by John Sickles in the late 1990s, and it may be seen as a sabermetric term of art, because he was doing some preseason surveys and found an abundance of left-handed relief specialists. So he came up with the term loogie. Well, as we're going to see, I've got a lot of effects between right and left-handed, so I created two more terms. We have a loogie, we need a roogie. got to have a right-handed one-out guy. I mean, how can there not be? And when I want to talk about the two of them together, they will simply be oogies. Again, words I never thought I'd use. Now, not all single batter appearances were necessarily planned to be that. They may have been expected to go longer, but it could be that the inning ended early because of a double play, or it could be the game ended for a walk-off. I call these incidental loogies. They may have been planned to be longer, but I've got no way of identifying them. All I know is how many times did they actually only face one batter, so I have to treat all of these the same. So here we have the frequency of oogies per team game by hand. And we find the total number of oogies over the last 123 years has been that. Before 1920, they almost didn't happen. There just weren't many single batter, weren't many oogies before 1920. Then they started up in the dead ball era, and you get to 1947, and it crosses 0.05 for the first time. Why is that a special number? 0.05 translates to one oogie every 20 team games. Every 10 games gets an oogie. That didn't happen until 1947. In 1973, of course, we have a drop with the DH coming in. And then in 1983, things start to go up. Remember this time, 1983 is going to become a really important year. Here it is for the loogies, the left-handers, and there's the roogies. Now, what's interesting is that in the early years, they were pretty similar, and from 1970 to 1980, that period from 70 to 80, they're almost identical. There are almost no differences at all. And after that, they started to go up, and most of the, until we get to the last few years, you see, once again, we have this phenomenon in 2016. In 2016, the frequency of oogies started dropping dramatically. Now, in the last 3 years, of course, the oogies have dropped off the table because we have the three-batter rule. But the big drop in 2016 is 4 years before the one-batter rule came in. I can't believe that they're all getting ready for it. There's something else is going on here. As I showed in previous research, in 2016, total relief appearances, Yeah, 1983 is a big year, because 1983 is basically the beginning of the closer era, and I'll give more details on that in a minute. That's when teams started using closers to a very high degree. So the last graph was oogies per team. This is total relief appearances per game by handedness. Okay, there's the total change, there's the left-handers, there's the right-handers. You have in the early stages, they're close but not identical. And then you have a spot in the middle there where they're basically identical for over 27 years until you get to the DH. And then the DH, they changed again. And they started up from 1975, and they've continued up and up and up. But they are not coming up the same way. Loogies have stayed relatively constant. Almost all of that change is in roogies. We've got right-handers going up. And the last 3 years, we find that the loogies show a bigger drop than the roogies. In fact, of the last 3 years, only two of them show this kind of a drop. So it's nice to know exactly how often they come in, but how good are they? I mean, the whole point of this is whether or not it's an effective strategy. So let's look at the data of batters against different groups of pitchers. First of all, here's the overall. In the last, in case you want to know, the last 103 seasons, the overall batting average is 261, and OPS is 725. Now, this varies widely over the last 100 years. There's some high offense years, there's some low. This is an average. The average for the 103 years is a 725 OPS, an ERA of 4.02, and a WHIP, walks plus hits per innings, of 137. How about starting pitchers? Starting pitchers look an awful lot like the overall average. Relievers do a little bit better. Non-oog relievers, not quite so well, and the oogies are spectacular. So not only are the oogies a different breed, they are really, really successful. 463 OPS instead of 725, a WHIP of 0.75. So this tells you why I think that the oogies got so much use. Now, although the oogies did really well, I do have to make a digression. Not all oogie appearances are equally effective. Let's do this by outs obtained. I can't say thirds of an innings pitched. I could, but outs obtained, and out is a third of an inning. Total of Oogies over all these years is 48,228. And the batting average, that's the same bottom, that line is the same as the bottom line from the previous graph. How often do they get one out? Well, 70% of the time they get a single out. And when they do, batting average against them is 015, and the OPS is 034. That's not 340, that's 034. How often do they get two outs? They get two outs 7.7% of the time with an OPS of 008. Now, the reason these minuscule numbers are not zero is that some of their outs were outs on the bases, pickoffs and caught stealings. Now, there's another alternative, which is they didn't get any outs. Maybe they didn't get any runners out. They didn't get any batters out. You ready? Batting average is 952. Now, 952 is a special number. 969 on-base average, 1,500 slugging, 2,500 OPS, and if you break this down, 6,000 hits, 3,500 walks, 900 doubles, 865 home runs. An OPS of 2,512 looks ridiculous. Remember, that could actually be 5,000. If every batter hits a home run, the OPS will be 5,000. So this is only halfway off to disaster, right? So I guess my conclusion from that is the Oogie failures are as spectacular as the Oogie successes, but there are many more successes than there are failures. In addition to those, there are 23 cases in which they got three outs. The Oogies got three outs. 11 of those were triple plays. Now that's an Oogie for him. And the other 12 were a combination of like a caught stealing and a double play. Let's look at the Oogie data in the year of the three-batter rule. Before 2020, before the three-batter rule, Oogies had that 473, 198, 076 whip. Let's do the next three really quickly because I don't want to block them all off together. Since the three-batter rule came in, Oogie performance has gone from really, really good to really, really, really good. OPSs under 200, whips of 0.1. So what has happened in the last 3 years is that the Oogies, despite all those other bad numbers I showed, the Oogies are incredibly effective in the last 3 years. This is not just the continuation of a long-term trend. I did check for that. This is just the last 3 years. Well, let's separate those by hand, because I'm really finding left-right is really important here. Before 2020, before the three-batter rule, Oogies had a 559 OPS and a 1.03 whip. Oogies, on the other hand, had a 382 OPS and a 052 whip. That means that the Oogies were twice as good as the Oogies in terms of whip. They're much better in OPS. That's certainly not what I expected. We all hear about the Oogies. It turns out the Oogies are spectacular before 2022. Well, let's fill this out to put in the last 3 years, and I'm going to put them in and then mark them off by blocks. Let's look at the bottom block first, the Oogies. They've improved during the three-batter era. OPS is down in the 200s or in 100. Whips down to 0.2. But look at the Oogie totals, the upper box. They're down to 053 OPS, 0.08 whip, not even a tenth of a batter per whip. But here's my favorite part of that. The ERA for 2021 and 2022 for Oogies is zero. That's not a typo. They have allowed no earned runs in the last 2 years. In the 3 years of the three-batter rule, Oogies have pitched 184 innings and have allowed exactly one earned run. The Oogies have pitched 300 innings and have allowed 34 earned runs. Now, there are still more Oogies than Oogies, as we see there, 900 some to 528. But the Oogie effectiveness in the last 3 years is nothing short of extraordinary. How often is a pitcher an Oogie? This one, it's the same thing for both. I put them up together on purpose. Let's look at the bottom one first. That's the green line is Oogies. They're the right-handers. Of all right-handed relief appearances, what percentage of those were as Oogies? That turns out to be about 5%. The red line is the Oogies. Of all their relief appearances, what percentage are as Oogies? That's much higher, of 10 up to 15. So a left-hander is much more likely to be a Oogie than a right-hander is to be a Oogie. So there is still something special about the Oogies here. Now, starting after World War II, 1947, the Oogie rate jumped up enormously, and it continued till about 1993. I have no idea why it went up in 1993. What happened in 1993? Well, there's a National League expansion that brought in Miami and Colorado. I can't imagine that that would have anything to do with Oogie usage, but there it is. And once again, in 2016, it starts to go down. What happened in 2016? And of course, in the last 3 years, they fell off the table. That you're not likely to be an Oogie at all in the last 3 years. Now, what changed in 2016? There were, in fact, two rules changes in 2016. The first is restriction on takeout slides, the Utley rule. The second is time limits on mound visits and the breaks between innings. I sure don't think they have anything to do with pitcher usage. So I started thinking of anything else that could have happened in 2016 that would account for these differences. Is this the start of openers and bullpen games? Is this when those started to become common? And if so, that would certainly change the way the bullpen was used if you've got all these bullpen games. Team data analysts. Every team now has a fleet of data analysts. But 10 years ago, that wasn't all that common. By 2016, I think every team had at least one specialist. Now every team does. They all have staffs. MLB StatCast data, the stuff that gives you the location of every pitch and the RPM of every pitch and the position of every fielder, that started in 2015. The way I like to look at it is the StatCast data provides information for the analysts to work on. So that happened in 2016. I don't know if that answers my question. I have to make a digression to my presentation in 2016, where I identified the beginning of the closer era. And to me, what's interesting about this, let me do that, whoops. The blue line is how often a team enters the ninth inning in a save situation. Turns out that for 106 years, it was about 25% of the time. It hardly ever changed. The chance of having a save situation to start the ninth inning was pretty constant. How about bringing in a new pitcher to pitch that ninth inning? Well, that changed in 1983. I call this the Tony La Russa effect. It may be a little unfair. But certainly, teams started using closers. How effective were they? Well, the top line is your chance of winning the game. And we see that the effect of the closer coming in was non-existent. That's why the title of my paper was The Myth of the Closer. That's through 2015, because that's all the data I had in 2016. Of course, we now have 7 years more. What does this look like if I add in the last 7 years? Some interesting changes. That in fact, first of all, the top line, the green line, still doesn't change. If you enter the ninth inning with a save situation, you're probably going to win the game. But the red line shows that they aren't bringing in new pitchers at the start of that inning as much, but it's starting 2016. And the blue line is quite interesting. Teams weren't getting in as many save situations. It's the first change in that line over 120 years. So in the last 3 years, of course, this has gone up. Very interesting. How about first batters? Everybody thinks it's true that when a pitcher and batter face each other for the first time in a game, the advantage is clearly in favor of the pitcher. Oogie's every appearance is a first batter faced, by definition. So let's compare this to other pitchers. All first batter faced, there it is, a 708 OPS instead of 725. So the first batters against any pitcher, the first batter faced by a pitcher will be worse off than batters overall. Starters, a little higher. Relievers, a little lower. So that means that starters do a little worse against their first batters than relievers do. Well, starters' first batters are always the leadoff hitters, who are usually pretty good hitters. So you would expect the starters to have a slightly higher result there. Non-Oogies are there, and of course, Oogies are down there. That Oogies do fantastic against their first batters, just like they do in all those other things. We also have to consider pinch hitters, because pitching changes are often accompanied by pinch hittings. And if you look at the pinch hitter changes over the last 103 years, we find the total OPS is 642. Instead of 725, it's 642. So pinch hitters do worse than non-pinch hitters. I don't think that's a surprise. Starters are even better than that at 612. Relievers, a little higher. Non-Oogies, 665. And Oogies, 492. So once again, the Oogies stand out, but pinch hitters are at a disadvantage for this performance. How about handedness matchups? Look across all pitching, batter, every 13,900,000 plate appearances. Here's the same stat line I showed you before without the ERA and WHIP in there. 725 OPS, 261 batting average. Against left-handed pitchers, you have that total. And against right-handed pitchers, you have that. Now stare at those three lines for a moment and tell me if you've ever seen a graph that had three lines that were as similar as those three lines. I was really surprised that over the last 103 years, it didn't matter if you had a left-handed or right-handed pitcher on the mound. As a total, aggregate, average, they all did the same. I did not expect them to be that similar. Well, how about if you factor in the batter? So left-handed pitchers against left-handed batters do a little bit better, gets right-handed worse, right-handed the other way. Let's highlight those. Left-handed batters do worse against left-handed pitchers. Right-handed batters do worse against right-handed pitchers. This is conventional wisdom, that if the pitcher and batter are the same side, it's the pitcher's advantage. Now, let's highlight the highs and the lows. The lowest combination there from a batter's point of view is left-handed batter and a left-handed pitcher goes down to a 686 OPS. The highest is a left-handed batter off a right-handed pitcher where it goes up to 760. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody, but it's pretty clear results. I then look to see how often Oogies get the handedness matchup. If the handedness matchup is that important, how often do they get it? Well, it turns out that the Oogies do really well. Loogies have an OPS 548 down to 1, and the Roogies OPS 375 down to 051. This was another astonishing result to me. Before, in the last 103 years, the Roogies have been much more effective than Loogies. WHIP is half, OPS is 170 points lower, so we all concentrate on the Loogie, because it's such a great word, and it turns out that the Roogies are incredibly effective. Well, let's finish those out. And so there's the Loogies against different-handed. Loogies are not much different overall against left and right-handed. Take it over the whole time, their results are quite similar. Right-handed pitchers, the same thing. They're moderately unaffected by the handedness of the batter. Okay. How often do the Oogies get the handedness advantage? First of all, let's look at how often it happens. This is when they come in. When an Oogie enters, how often is there a pinch hitter? How often is there not? For Loogies, there is no pinch hitter 79.9% of the time. For Roogies, 87%. So over 80% of the time when Oogie enters, there is no pinch hitter. How about handedness advantage in those situations? For the Loogie, they have a handedness advantage 86.9% when there is no pinch hitter, but only 23% when there is a pinch hitter. And for the Roogies, it goes from 81 down to 47. So the Loogies are really hurt by pinch hitters. Roogies are not. This points out a weakness in our data, which is when we have simultaneous occurrence of a change in pitcher and a pinch hitter, I don't know which one happens first. So do you bring in a Loogie and then bring in a left-handed pinch hitter? Probably not. Do you bring in a left-handed pinch hitter and then bring in a Loogie? Probably, but I don't know. Even in modern games with all the details, it's not always easy to tell. And back in the days before you had constant video evidence, there's no way that you know which happened. I think it's probably likely, based on this table, that left-handed pitcher came in and was met by a right-handed pinch hitter, but I can't be positive of that. Okay. When do Oogies enter? I'm going to look at four things. How many outs when they enter? What's the score difference when they enter? What inning do they enter? And what's the base runner situation, especially how many inherited runners? First of all, Oogie entries by out. How often do Oogies enter with zero outs? Less than 20% of the time. How often do they enter with one out? A little bit higher. How often do Oogies enter with two outs? Way up there. Oogies have been two-out pitchers since 1920. It's not just now, they've always been two-out pitchers. And of course, the last 3 years are ridiculous, that Oogies now come in 90% of the time with two outs, and corresponding, the non-Oogies are down at like 5% or something like that. How about starting an inning? How about how often a pitcher starts an inning? Well, here's total relief appearances, not Oogies, total relief appearances to start inning, and the blue line there is the non-Oogies, the red is the Oogies. Well, Oogies have never started innings much. We just saw they usually came in with two outs. And in the last 3 years, of course, it's way down. But this graph has some interesting features. Once again, 1946, the world changed. World War II ended, and everybody changed the way they were using pitchers. And I have no idea why that is. It stayed there for 27 years, very little change, until 1973 when the DH came, and relief pitchers to start an inning went way down. And it's been coming up since. And of course, in the last 3 years, it's changed even more. Got more relief pitchers to start an inning, and the loogies are almost all the way off. Now, the change with the occurrence of the DH makes all the sense in the world, because the most common reason for a new pitcher to start an inning is you pinch hit for the pitcher in the last inning. Once you have a DH, you're not pinch hitting for the pitcher anymore because he's not there. So let's look at this. Pinch hitters per team, per game, total, and for pitchers. The blue line is total pinch hitters. The red line is pinch hitters for pitchers. Until 1946, we had around a one pinch hitter per team per game. And for pitchers, it was about 0.6. So about two-thirds of the pinch hitters were for pitchers. Once the DH comes in, that falls off the table because the American League isn't doing it anymore. Well, almost never. And then it stayed there till around 1993 or so, when we are well into the closer era, and the use of pinch hitters for pitchers starts to go up. During the closer era, we use more pinch hitters for pitchers because you're hitting for that guy so you can start the ninth inning with a fresh pitcher. What's interesting, since the blue line stays constant there from 1993 on, and the red line's going up, that means the pinch hitters for non-pitchers have been going down. That's the only way that line can stay constant. Oh, the last 3 years are pretty hilarious, the up and down and up. In 2020, the National League had the DH, and so their pinch hitters for pitchers went to zero. In 2021, the National League got it back, and it went back to where it had been, and in 22, they're back to using the DH, and probably forever, so that up and down and up and down is exactly what you would expect. How about the score? What is the score when Oogies enter? Now, the left-hand graph of this is a -5. That's every game you enter with a deficit of 5 runs or more. The right-hand side is 5, so that's entering with an advantage of 5 or more. So you find that the most common situation for an Oogie to enter is with a 2-run lead. And if you look at the overall, look at all games, not just when the Oogies come in, it's amazingly centered around 0. This is all plays, all batters, all pitchers. It is centered around 0. The most common thing for all of Major League history is about 26% of the plate appearances happen with the score tied. That'd be an interesting thing to try to bet somebody on. All right. Entry of Oogies by inning. I'm going to give you a really, really messy graph. I'll warn you in advance. But there's a purpose to it, so bear with me. Here goes. I told you it was messy. And the top line, I hope you can see the colors, the top line is purple. That's entering in the Oogies entering in the ninth. Then the green is entering in the eighth. The red is entering in the seventh. The blue is entering in the sixth. Up until 1983, the order basically did not change. The Oogies entered more commonly in the ninth than any other inning and went down 8-7-6. So Oogies were late in the game guys, and it got less and less. Well, starting in 1983, if you look at that purple line, it takes a nosedive. So in 1983, Oogie entries start going way down in the ninth inning, partly because this is the closer era. Now, most of the interesting stuff in this graph is from 1980 onward. So I pulled out the 1980 data off of that mess, and I'm going to present that all by itself. Let's do each inning by itself. There's entering in the sixth inning, entering the seventh inning, entering in the eighth inning, and entering in the ninth inning. Oogies just don't enter in the ninth inning very much. This has really, really fallen off the table. How about inherited runners? How often do what is the inherited runner situation when pitchers come in? Well, it turns out that the non-Oogies average around one, and it's been falling off. But Oogies are twice as much. Oogies come in situations with twice as many runners on base as almost as non-Oogies do. Certainly an indication that Oogies are seen as pretty special guys. They're coming in tougher situations. There is an interesting beep here in 1973 with the DH. We had a bump in the inherited runners for the non-Oogies. All I can think of is for this, before the DH, it was common for managers to let a pitcher get through an inning so he could use a pinch hitter the next inning. Well, you can't do that anymore, and there is no pitcher pitching, so that's when that changed. But, of course, that's been going down, 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 and the Oogies have also been going down, and the last 3 years have really changed. Never mind how many inherited runners are there. What we really care about is how many of the inherited runners score. That's what this is all about. And it turns out that green line is the total scoring of inherited runners since 1920. It was up around 50%. It's now down over 30%. Non-Oogies look an awful lot like the total. Oogies are way down there. That while non-Oogies are allowing maybe 40, 30% of the runners to score, Oogies are allowing 10% of the runners to score. Remember, low on this graph is better. This is percentage scoring, so increased effectiveness is going down. That the Oogies just don't let many of their guys score. Now, from 1950 to 1990, it was an amazingly constant rate at about 10% of the runners, inherited runners scoring by Oogies. And of course, in the last 3 years, the percentage of inherited runners has disappeared because the Oogies are getting everybody out. Well, not everybody, a lot of people out, except for those two out plays. Next thing I looked at is leverage. Tom Tango has done groundbreaking work in trying to capture the impact of a situation into a single variable. If you look at innings, the inning, the score, and the outs, and look at all possible situations, you can figure out how impactful a situation is. Let me show you a schematic of that, then I'll give some examples. Start with the historical probability of winning, whatever the current situation is. What is the probability of winning from here? This has been compiled by lots of people over lots of years using vector sheet data, actually. You look at every possible play result, so there's 23 possible play results, and you look at what the effect of each of those play results is on the probability of winning. This gives you a new probability of winning after all of those, and you set that average situation to a leverage index of 1. Okay, let's take some real examples. Let's take a low leverage situation. Two outs in the bottom of the ninth, home team trailing by 4 runs. The chance of winning that game is 2%. Over the history of baseball, 2% of the time the home team wins that game. Not too good. What's the best thing that can happen? Well, the batter can hit a home run. That'll raise your probability of winning all the way up to 6%. The worst that can happen is he makes an out and the game's over, and you have a 0% probability of winning. This is a low leverage situation, 0.1. Remember, the average is 1. This is a tenth of that. Let's look at a high leverage scenario. 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth, home team trailing by 1 run. 28% probability for the home team to win in this situation. What's the best possible result? You score 2 runs and you win the game, 100%. What's the worst probability? An out, 0%, and you lose the game. So the range there is enormous, and the leverage index is 10.9. This is the highest of everything that Tom calculated. So that means that no matter what the batter does there, this is an incredibly impactful situation. Well, there's another possibility there real quickly. There's an intermediate result in that last scenario, which is you could score 1 run to tie the game, which would then raise your probability of winning to 67% for the home team to win that game, which now has a new leverage index of only 6.4, which is still extraordinarily high. Okay, how has this changed over the years? All pitchers have a value of 1, that's what we set it to be. Starters are 1. Non-Oogie relievers are 1.1. Oogies are 2.2. So Oogies come in at situations that have twice the impact of non-Oogies. So they've obviously been seen as important for over 100 years. Let's look at this by year. The leverage values upon entry for non-Oogies, hardly ever changes. For Oogies, it was way high, and then it started to go down, and it started to go down in the era of the closer, because we're using fewer and fewer Oogies in the era of the closer. What are the most common, and the last year it beeps up again. What are the most frequent situations for an Oogie to entry? The most common is men on first and second with two outs in the ninth. That's the most common time for an Oogie entry, 5%. Next is first only with two outs in the eighth. Then first and second with two outs in the eighth. First only, two outs in the ninth. And then first only with two outs in the seventh. These are the five most common times for Oogies to enter. They're all with two outs. They're all late in the game. Eighth and ninth for most of them, seventh for most. That together they are some 23% of all total Oogie entries. Now, who are these Oogies? This next graph is going to be, hope the next table should be for people's entertainment. Find your favorite Oogie on this table and see what you think. Mike Myers is the leader all time. He was an Oogie 314 times. 35% of his major league games were as an Oogie. Javier Lopez is close, 33.4. Randy Choate, 41% of his appearances are as an Oogie. Jesse Orozco, only 18. Gee, Jesse started four games. Dan Plesac started 14, Buddy Groom 15. Tony Fossas was always my favorite off of this. And he's down at 29% of his career appearances are as an Oogie. Now, what do these 10 men have in common? They're all left-handed. In fact, when I calculated this, the top 42 positions on this list are left-handed. The first right-hander is Joe Smith at 43rd. Joe's pitched for eight teams in the last 7 years, and his Oogie percentage is 8%. Now, oops. Sorry, skip that one. Next thing to ask is how often do Oogies appear in terms of appearances and by hand? I'm trying to break down different people. There have been 4,937 different men who were Oogies for the total of 48,228 Oogie appearances. Total Oogies, this is counting the bodies. Loogies are 31% of the bodies, Roogies are 68. Now that's not a surprise. Right-handers are about 2-1 over left-handers in innings pitched and in games and everything else. That's for bodies who are Oogies. How about appearances? The Loogies are 51% of the appearances, even though they're only a third of 51% of the appearances, even though they're a third of the bodies. So even though an Oogie is more likely to be a right-hander, the Oogie appearance is more likely to be a left-hander. The stated reason MLB had for doing this rule is to make games shorter. So let's look at game time. Here's the average game length in minutes from 1920 through last year. The red line across there is when you cross the three-hour mark. And of course, there's been an 80-minute increase since 1920. And we find, interestingly enough, that everybody's been calculating average game time this year. What is it this year? Anybody know? 238, close. 240. And so there it is. I don't like putting up mid-season numbers. I like whole seasons. But there it is. I knew somebody was going to ask, so there it is. There's where we are in 2023. It's down to there. Well, you notice that line. It's hardly a steady increase. Some years, areas it's faster than others, and some years it actually went down. So I did this graph. Look at this for a second. This is a year-to-year change. What is the change in game length from the year before? Now, the line across the middle is zero, would be no change in game length from the year before. Points above the line, or it got longer. Points below the line, got shorter. Well, of course, there's more above the line because games have been getting longer. But there's some big numbers below the line. There's several years where the games got much, much shorter. Interestingly, in 1963, games went down by 8.5 minutes over 1962. 1963 was the first year of the higher mound and the higher strike zone. I can't imagine what that did. There were more strikeouts that year. There were more walks that year. I don't know. The games got 8 minutes slower. Now, has the three-batter rule made games get shorter? Well, for two of the 3 years of the three-batter rule, they got longer. So I guess it didn't do too much, did it? It went down last year, but the first 2 years, it actually went up. I pulled the seven-inning games out of this. This is just nine-inning games. Okay. This year, there will be lots of changes with the pitch clock and all that, but I'm certainly not able to talk about that right now. Here's a summary. Oogies are historically much more effective than other relievers. I think I've shown that clearly. Loogies are a majority of oogie appearances. Oogie entries occur in high leverage situations. We have managers talking about leverage. The other day I heard Dave Roberts of the Dodgers saying, our bullpen's a mess. My problem is I don't have a lot of high leverage relievers out there right now. So they're thinking about it this way. Roogies were much more effective than loogies before 2020. That's now completely reversed. Oogie use has declined in the last 3 years, but oogie effectiveness has gone up. The effect of the three-batter rule on the time of game has been minimal. Got two more slides. Well, three. I have some unanswered questions. I've given you many details about changes in pitcher usage over the last century, but two dates still need better explanation. What happened in 1946? What happened in 2016? Suggestions are welcomed. I really don't know what happened in 2016, and I really would like to. Conclusion? My title had a question about the status of the loogie, specifically whether or not this three-batter rule would eliminate the use of the specialist. The usage patterns have certainly changed, but the enhanced effectiveness means to me the answer is the loogie has not met his demise. I have two acknowledgments. First, my friend Tom Schieber of the Hall of Fame is to be blamed for me starting all this 3 years ago. He started being bugged by this, and so he set me off on this path. And the other is my wonderful wife, Amy Tetlow-Smith, for being a tremendous consultant as I worked on this nonstop for 6 months. Bless her patience. A tremendous editor, a very rigorous editor, and my favorite muse. Thank you. Okay, Dick.
In the form of a question, have you considered that 1946 as a season was a season-long spring training in the sense that there were many players that there were more players just because of special rules, and for the most part, nobody really knew how people were coming back from the war were going to perform, and basically managers were tempted to do a lot more experimentation.
I totally agree with that. It was also roster size issues. They were fiddling around making rosters bigger as well as that.
Exactly, yes.
But it wasn't just 1946. It then continued for 15 more years.
Well, by 1940, that's a good point.
So explaining why it changed in 46, I think what you said makes all the sense in the world. But why did it persist?
Because it worked, I guess.
Well,
because it was.
Anyway, there it is. David?
Congrats on 25 years.
Well, thank you.
It might be chicken and the egg, but with the expansion of rosters and the preponderance of relief pitching as a part of the roster now, there are fewer availabilities for pinch hitters.
Yes.
And I don't know what the correlation is between fewer available pinch hitters and the increasing usage of loogies, roogies, and oogies. So maybe that might be.
Yeah, when I go to Phillies games, the Phillies are kind enough to give me a press credential, which is wonderful. The data sheet they hand out lists all that day's players, lists everybody that's in the bullpen by left and right, lists all the extra players. There are 13 guys in the bullpen. There's four position players. Mm-hmm. And the game I went to a couple weeks ago against Atlanta, two of the Atlanta position players were catchers, which just absolutely blew my mind. So you only got four guys you can possibly use.
You know, I've always associated the loogie term for people who come in, like they'll pitch to Bryce Harper and then immediately get pulled right after. It seems like this use is kind of biasing it because, particularly now with the three-batter rule, the only way you can be an oogie is if you get out of the inning or give up a walk-off. So it's saying that, okay, what's your effectiveness? If you get out of the inning, your effectiveness is great. Mm-hmm. And so the stats are obviously
My answer to that is they've always been two-out pitchers. They're now almost exclusively two-out pitchers, which mm-hmm. gets around that. I mean, would you do that to Bryce Harper with the bases loaded and nobody out? I don't think so, because if you've got two right-handed hitters coming up behind him, I don't think that's a good thing to be doing. So I think the big change there is this happens overwhelmingly with two outs.
I could believe that, I guess, for with the exception of now. I think you're still biasing your statistics on the last 3 years because, as I said, you can only be an oogie if you...
But even before, it's like 90% now, but before that, like 80-85% of the entries were already with two outs. Mm-hmm. I mean, the oogies have always been two-out pitchers.
Right, but I think that end of the... I'd be curious if you went back and just looked at the people who came in and pitched a one-batter mid-inning without finishing the inning. Because I don't think their effectiveness is going to be so remarkably better. You know, certainly you can't look at Lugies and see zero ERAs.
No, I did not separate that in the pre-three-batter rule era.
Right.
Look at Lugies facing one batter.
And getting pulled immediately.
But who else would be facing one batter?
Well, I don't understand that.
Only Lugies are facing one batter.
Right, but at an end of an inning, it just seems like it's biasing. You're just including...
Well, the end of the inning stuff is definitely a bias. I totally agree. Yeah. Cecilia?
I'm positing a sociological explanation in that managers now are very copycat-ish.
And as soon as someone
introduces a new strategy, everybody tries it.
It's the Tony La Russa phenomenon.
Yeah. So, you know, the opener philosophy came in and all of a sudden, the shift, et cetera. So that's my current posit, is that maybe it's sociological.
I think that's a good one. One of the things I fiddled with, but I didn't have time, what's the definition of a bullpen game? Well, our starting pitcher's rotation's in trouble. We have to have a bullpen game tomorrow. What's a bullpen game? You're going to start a guy who would normally be a reliever, and you expect him to pitch no more than three innings, maybe two. How do you identify those guys? How do I know you're primarily a reliever and you're not? It's not easy to... I like the idea of the bullpen game, but I'm not sure how I'd identify those people.
Yeah. Some of those years that you mentioned that are kind of hard to explain, that had some blips. What about effects from teams? Did you look at that?
Yeah.
Like, was there a set of teams that just had a ton of usage and made the average go up?
I did. And the most common, the standout example of that is 1918 Red Sox decided they were going to have everybody pitch a complete game every day. So that beep in 1918 is largely the Red Sox. But that's the only one of those that I could trace to a specific team. It was a great idea. Rod?
So the whole concept of Lugies basically just demonstrates the validity of what we know about lefty versus righty matchups.
A lot of
it. And so the thing is, we do know that not everybody has those common splits.
These are big averages. You're absolutely right.
Big averages. So of the 42, did you see the top, they were all Lugies.
Yes.
So did you have anybody with reverse splits out of those top 42?
No.
They all have conventional splits.
I can only put so many columns on that table, but yes, you're right. That's a great thing to ask. I guess I should have made a different table. None of them had reverse splits.
The length of game data is going to be connected with two independent factors. How many batters come up, how long it takes to dispose of the batter. In 63 and some other years on that list, the number of total batters per game dropped dramatically, especially in 63. So even if they're taking the same amount of time per batter as before, there just weren't as many.
But there were a lot more walks and strikeouts, both of which take more time because there's more pitches, but obviously not as much. You're absolutely right.
Two easy questions. Postseason data included in Lugies?
No, I never include postseason data in my stuff. Partly because, look, I've got 205,000 games here. I don't want to just put in 600, you know. No. But postseason things are so biased in so many different ways, I just don't do it. I just have never considered the postseason
stuff.
It's
a separate data set.
Yeah, and a small data set. Sorry.
The second question, did I understand you to say that there was one earned run yielded by Lugies in the last 3 years?
One. One.
Can you tell me who drove in that run?
No. I did not. I don't know. I don't know. Damn. Of all the things I didn't anticipate, that's really great. Sorry.
Yeah.
Neil?
So it's my understanding that your definition of an oogie, that a guy is supposed to get one out. Let's say he doesn't get the out, he stays in, does that mean he's no longer in your
sample?
No,
these are guys who only faced one batter.
Okay, so that's a very biased sample.
Of course,
ones who failed are no longer in your study.
But that's what I talked about, was the intent for this guy to only face one batter. We don't know that.
Okay.
I'm talking about guys who did face one batter. Okay. You're absolutely right. I call them accidental oogies. You could call them failures. That's just as good. But I don't know who they are.
Okay.
There's no way I could identify them in the data.
This is definitely not in your data set, but one question I have, what is your sense in terms of the pitch mix or the sort of, obviously, like Mariano Rivera, right? One pitch, air quotes. But there are a lot of these one-out guys, especially now, they're being driven by pitch design to have very specific grip, rotation axis, that kind of stuff. And obviously we can't maybe go back to, let's say 2008, maybe we could get something close to that. But like anything before that, it would be, reported from scouts or something like that. Do you have a sense of maybe this going along with pitch design? Is there a way to do that?
Most of these guys aren't on my top list or not real recent guys. Mm-hmm. My view of the modern bullpen is, if you can't throw 98 to 103, you don't get to be a relief pitcher.
Right.
I mean, that's every relief pitcher comes in and throws 99 to 100. So I understand what you're saying, but I think the main thing on pitch mix is you throw 10 pitches in a row at 100, then you throw one at 85, then you throw 10 more at 100.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Sean.
So Dave, you showed like an 034 OPS allowed. But with the three batter rule, if a pitcher enters with two outs,
yes,
on base, if they get an out, then the inning's over and they're now an oogie.
Right.
If they don't get an out, they give up a hit, they allow it. Now they're no longer an oogie, so they're not in that sample.
Correct.
So an 034 is not how effective that pitcher is. It's the number of, that's the batting average of pitchers who are face one batter now.
Yes.
Yeah, but you can't face one batter if you don't get an out. Because three batter rule, you have to face an additional batter after you give up that hit.
You're right, and I said that wrong. Those are guys who faced either zero or one. So if you got an out by picking somebody off, you show up on my list.
Right, but if you get a hit, you cannot appear on that list.
Because you have to face another batter.
Because you have to face the next batter because of the three-batter rule.
No, but you give up a hit and then pick the guy off. That'll give you a third of an inning pitched. Third of an inning pitched.
Right, but that's an extraordinarily rare
No, it's not.
Outcome.
It's hundreds of cases.
Not in the last 3 years.
No, not in the last 3 years.
Right,
But the world changed 3 years ago.
The majority of them give up a hit and then go on to pitch to additional batters.
That's right.
Right.
That's
okay.
Right.
You're talking about a special group of batters, too. Were you able to characterize them, the Bonds, the Harpers, that are selected for this kind of event?
I'm not sure I know what you mean about how they're selected for this.
Well, all of these guys that face these loogies are usually the more proficient batters also. Were you able to measure that?
No, well, what I found, and I did not nail this in detail, what I found is that loogies, you talk about Bonds being left-handed, of course, loogies faced an awful lot of right-handers because they'd pinch hit a right-hander against the loogie. So Bonds was special because he hit everybody. So I don't know. I don't know the answer. I didn't break that out.
I just think it might make the data even more impressive.
Yeah, it might be.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.